So I posed the question that has, I don't want to say been haunting me, but has been prominent in my thinking all week. Where do we go from here? And you can look at that in a couple different ways. You can look at it individually. Where do I go from here? Or we can look at it as a congregation. Where do we go from here? I have been so focused for nearly 4 months on Torah that the thoughts, the ideas for each sermon basically wrote themselves. They were effortless, for I firmly believe the Ruach HaKodesh was guiding me to a point where we culminated with Simcha Torah, rejoicing in Torah. With such intended focus, I had not considered what was next. In other words, where do we go from here? What's next for you in the congregation as it pertains to our direction and our focus? The first thing to remember is that our focus has not changed. That being our vision, singular, yet complex in its presentation, we state as follows. And this is on our website, so this isn't going to be the first time you've ever seen it. It's not going to be the last time you ever see it. Kehillah Portland, a Messianic Jewish synagogue, is a manifestation of God's present day regeneration and restoring work in the house of Israel. Kehillah Portland is a faith community where Jewish people can embrace their Jewish identity and heritage as believers in King Messiah Yeshua. The narrative has been for many years, oh, well, you're a believer in Jesus, you're no longer Jewish anymore. That's a lie. But we don't stop there with our vision. Kehillah Portland encourages non-Jewish believers in Messiah who desire to embrace the Jewish heritage of their faith and come alongside Jewish believers to serve and express their faith in worshiping the God of Israel. So by no means is our vision myopic. In no means are we exclusionary. I don't care if you're a Jew or a Gentile. Everybody needs Messiah. Amen. Keeping in mind, there has been sort of a vacuum in the world when it comes to the Jew first. That's why we're here. Our vision is clear and inclusive to whether you are Jewish or not does not matter. Our purpose as a congregation is equally clear. Kehillah Portland is a Messianic Jewish synagogue with the purpose to proclaim the redemptive power and purpose of God through his servant, our Messiah Yeshua. This proclamation is to all people with the express desire to connect them with the God of Israel through prayer, through worship, and through community. To equip people to serve, to grow to maturity, and to inspire believers everywhere to recognize the irrevocable calling of God upon the Jewish people, encouraging the nations to fulfill their biblical mandate to come alongside Israel as co-heirs to the covenants of promise. I can't get any clearer than that. Yet, our mission. I don't have a little tape recorder where I get a little cassette, I put it in the little tape recorder, I play it, then at the end this message will destruct and Mission Impossible, never mind. Kehillah Portland is established with the purpose of restoring the people of Israel in the state of Maine to their God and ultimately to their biblical calling. We will set forth to do this in the following manner: to be committed and to grow in a lifestyle of faith called biblical Judaism. I'll probably do an entire message on what biblical Judaism is, keeping in mind, if you're here, you've experienced it. To reveal first to the Jewish people of Maine and also to the non-Jewish people of Maine the true identity and heritage of King Messiah. Many of you, what you have been taught and told over the years is not the fullness of his heritage. It's been compromised to some extent. That as a congregation, we support Israel and the Jewish people in opposing all acts of hatred, that is, anti-Semitism, brought against them. We haven't reached the levels of Europe in the 30s and 40s yet, but it's returning. And that we call all people in the body of Messiah to the proper understanding of God's covenant promise to Israel and their restoration. These are promises that aren't made to anyone else. But it's the power of what God has promised in drawing the nations closer, grafting them in, that you become part of the plan, as opposed to what Shaul conveys in Ephesians 2, where you were once foreigners and aliens, without hope and without God. So as God moves to the Jewish people, the impact on the world is felt, it's known. You're experiencing it as we speak. So we don't need to look at these aspects any further to answer the question, where do we go from here? In this week's Parsha, Noach, we read of many people coming together. In Genesis 11:1, the whole earth used the same language, the same words. It came about that as they traveled from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and lived there. My understanding is this is the whole earthly population as is known at the time. The people were one and thus acted and functioned as one, for they communicated in one language, so there was no division in any aspect. The people desired to make a name for themselves. In verse 3, they said to one another, "Come, let's make bricks and bake them in the fire." So they had bricks for building stone and clay for mortar. Then they said, "Come, let's build ourselves a city with a tower that has its top reaching up into heaven, so that we can make a name for ourselves and not be scattered all over the earth." Make a name for themselves so that they would not be scattered throughout the earth. It is like they were functioning with one mind, one purpose. However, Adonai would go down to see what was happening. In verses 5 and 6, Adonai came down to see the city and the tower the people were building. Adonai said, "Look, the people are united. They all have a single language. And see what they're starting to do. At this rate, nothing they set out to accomplish will be impossible for them. So come, let's go down and confuse their language so that they won't understand each other's speech." One may ask, what could this have looked like? I see this as the people were about their business of making a name for themselves, communicating, everyone with a single language. Then all of a sudden, Adonai changes what comes out of their mouths, changing their language to where confusion and chaos occurred. Not able to communicate directly as everyone was doing, there was a concerted effort to seek out someone who spoke the same language, someone they could understand. As people found others who spoke their language, they would gather together. In gathering together and becoming able to communicate, they in essence established their own community. Thus, ultimately, what the people did not want to do happened. So from there, Adonai scattered them all over the earth, and they stopped building the city. Where did they go from here? As is defined in Genesis 10, each community, each nation, went their own way and established the foundation of what we have today. Though there are far more than 70 nations today, this is the origin of where we are today. Some nations, such as Mitzrayim, Egypt, recorded in Genesis 10:6, are mentioned directly, while many others, through attrition or conquest simply do not exist on today's map anymore. Today, there are approximately 195 countries. And I say approximately because the United Nations definition I consider to be flawed. In one aspect, Taiwan, a sovereign nation, isn't considered its own nation, while the state of Palestine is included. This isn't the place to have this discussion, but thought it should at least be made known so to diffuse any later comments. Where they went was to a land and settled, established their country's location. We read in Numbers in Bamidbar, which literally means wanderings of a nation not represented by Genesis 10, a nation that did not exist but was established through a covenant Adonai made with a single individual, Avram. You should know the verses of Genesis 12, 1 through 3 to heart, so I'm not going to reiterate them here. The nation was promised a land just like all the other nations. Yet unlike all the other nations, Adonai would establish a distinct relationship between these people and the land that is promised to them. Adonai had established a specific piece of the earth that he had created for a people that would bear his name, his word, and ultimately his presence. He conveyed these words to Avram. Know this for certain. Your descendants will be foreigners in a land that is not theirs. They will be slaves and held in oppression their 400 years. But I will also judge that nation, the one that makes them slaves. Afterwards, they will leave with many possessions. As for you, you will join your ancestors in peace and be buried at a good old age. Only in the fourth generation will your descendants come back here, because only then will the Amorites be ripe for punishment. Thus, a people who would come under the authority of a nation, Mitzrayim or Egypt, would be enslaved until Adonai would hear the cry of his people. In Exodus 2:23, sometime during those many years, the king of Egypt died. But the people of Israel still groaned under the yoke of slavery. And they cried out, and their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God. God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. God saw the people of Israel, and God acknowledged them. Adonai would act on behalf of the people, providing a deliverer who would lead them out of oppression and into freedom, with the destination being a land promised them. Upon freedom, their first stop was to a mountain and an encounter with their God. Unlike the gods of the land they had just left, this God spoke, and his presence was noticeable, unlike the silent, lifeless statues that populated the land of Egypt. An encounter that would establish a relationship between Adonai and Israel, one that the people did not know, yet Adonai did not forget the patriarchs, a nation that would come to bear his name and his reputation. Unfortunately, we as humans do not always rise up to the expectation placed upon us, whereby even when something is divinely established, we ultimately are the authors of our own self-inflicted sabotage. In this case, the nation destined to inhabit the land promised did just that. Their sabotage was not trusting Adonai. In Numbers 14, verses 32, "But you, your carcasses will fall in this desert, and your children will wander about in the desert for 40 years, bearing the consequences of your prostitutions until the desert eats up your carcasses. It will be a year for every day you spent reconnoitering the land that you will bear the consequences of your offenses. 40 days, 40 years. Then you will know what it means to oppose me." Where did they go from the mountain? One might say they went nowhere. They went nowhere specific. Yet they went many specific places. Yet none of them were their intended destination. This wandering, as conveyed, would last 40 years. Thus, where did they go after the 40 years had concluded? Simply put, their intended destination. Residing in the land for centuries now, establishing a presence, the nation of Israel had an obligation for residing in the land, and that was to follow Adonai's mitzvot. In Deuteronomy 28, starting in verse 9, Adonai will establish you as a people, separated out for himself, as he has sworn to you, if you will observe the mitzvot of Adonai your God and follow his ways. Then all the people of the earth will see that Adonai's name, his presence, is with you, so that they will be afraid of you. For Adonai had revealed that should they not do so, in Deuteronomy 28:15, but if you refuse to pay attention to what Adonai your God says, and do not observe and obey all his mitzvot and regulations which I am giving you today, then all the following curses will be yours in abundance, including expulsion from the land. For Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 1 talks of a future time. He says, Adonai conveys, when the time arrives that all these things have come upon you, both the blessing and the curse, which I have presented to you, and you are there among the nations to which Adonai your God has driven you, then at last you will start thinking about what has happened to you. Where do we go from here? What happened? They were removed from the land by their enemies, defeated and brought under the authority of a king not their own. Adonai removed his protection because of a nation's transgressions towards him. You have likely heard this saying before, where much is given, much more. More I put in, much more is required. This is an understatement when it comes to the relationship Adonai has established with Israel, and I will take it a step further, that he has established with you as well. Where did they go from here? They went into captivity, their unintended destination. Though unintended, it became a reality. Jeremiah chapter 29. Here's what Adonai, the God of Israel, says to all those in exile, whom I have caused to be carried off captive from Jerusalem to Babel. Build yourselves houses, live in them, plant gardens, and eat what they produce. Choose women to marry and have sons and daughters. Choose wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage to men, so that they can have sons and daughters. Increase your numbers there, don't decrease. Seek the welfare of the city to which I have caused you to go in exile, and pray to Adonai on its behalf, for your welfare is bound up in its welfare. They went to an unintended place, but what is God basically saying? Make yourself at home, you're going to be here for a while. Where did they go from here? Nowhere. They would not go until Adonai caused them to go. Jeremiah 29, starting in verse 8. For this is what Adonai, the God of Israel, says. Don't let your prophets who are living among you and your diviners deceive you. And don't pay attention to the dreams you urge them to dream. For they are prophesying falsely in my name. I have not sent them. In other words, well, God is going to deliver us soon. He's going to deliver us and we're going to go back. God's saying, don't believe them. Why? For here is what Adonai says. After Babel's 70 years are over, I don't care what prophecy you hear, not until 70 years have gone by will God do anything. After Babel's 70 years are over, I will remember you and fulfill my good promise to you by bringing you back to this place. for I know what plans I have in mind for you, says Adonai, plans for well-being, not for bad things, so that you can have hope and a future. When you call on me and pray to me, I will listen to you. When you seek me, you will find me, provided you seek for me wholeheartedly. And I will let you find me, says Adonai. Then I will reverse your exile. I will gather you from all the nations and places where I have driven you, says Adonai, and bring you back to the place from which I exiled you. Not a day, not an hour, not a minute before. Don't pray in a way that I will not answer you. Focus. Pray on the city you're going to be in, because your future, your immediate future, rests with them. Where did they go from here? When it was time, they went back home. Regardless of your circumstances, you are always direction bound. The question to ask yourself, is the direction you are heading yours or Adonai's? I have shared with you examples of both. When it is Adonai's direction, there is no prevention of it occurring when he is truly leading. We have seen what happens when we get in the way and our direction gets diverted. Yet when that direction is diverted, we see Adonai's faithfulness to his people and ultimately enables them to succeed in reaching their destination. Yet we have to be willing to submit to him in order to succeed. One final example I want to share with you. Where did they go from here? Matthew chapter 27, starting in verse 45. From noon until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, all the land was covered with darkness. At about 3, Yeshua uttered a loud cry, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani? My God, why have you deserted me? On hearing this, some of the bystanders said, he's calling for Eliyahu. Immediately, one of them ran and took a sponge, soaked it in vinegar, put it on a stick, and gave it to him to drink. The rest said, wait, let's see if Eliyahu comes and rescues him. But Yeshua, again crying out a loud voice, yielded up his spirit. Where did those who followed Yeshua for 3 years go? At first they went here. John chapter 20, verse 19. In the evening, the same day, the first day of the week, when the Talmidim were gathered together behind locked doors out of fear of the Judeans, where did they go? To a place that was not intended for them to go. But sometimes you have to go to a place unintended to actually experience that experience. But that verse is not complete, because the rest of chapter 20 and verse 19, Yeshua came, stood in the middle, and said, Shalom Aleichem. Verse 20, having greeted them, he showed them his hands and his side. The Talmidim were overjoyed to see the Lord. Shalom Aleichem, Yeshua repeated, just as the Father sent me, I myself am also sending you. Having said this, he breathed on them and said to them, receive the Ruach HaKodesh. If you forgive someone's sins, their sins are forgiven. If you hold them, they are held. Now, where did they go from here? The locked room, hiding out in fear. They were now empowered with the Spirit of God and would become further prepared. Luke chapter 24, Yeshua said to them, this is what I meant when I was still with you and told you that everything written about me in the Torah of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms had to be fulfilled. Then he opened their minds so that they could understand the Tanakh, telling them, here is what it says, the Messiah is to suffer and rise from the dead on the third day, and in his name repentance leading to forgiveness of sins is to be proclaimed to the people from all nations, starting in Jerusalem. And thus they would go forth. Where did they go from here? Matthew 28, starting in verse 18. Yeshua came and talked with them. He said, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make people from all nations into Talmidim, immersing them into the reality of the Father, the Son, and the Ruach HaKodesh, and teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. And remember, I will be with you always, yes, even until the end of the age." So where do we go from here? I believe the last 18 weeks were intended to establish a foundation for you based on Torah and Yeshua. In reality, that is God's reality. They are one and the same. So where are we to go here as a congregation? I believe we are to build upon the foundation, for our starter kit is set. We have been given a foundation and a cornerstone. Now we are to build upon it. I am not certain what Adonai will share specifically as we go from here, but I am confident he will reveal more to us. I share this with you because, and I'm not finished yet, but what you have heard was scribbled on a little half sheet of paper, the outline. And the outline was filled in this morning. Not knowing what Ron was going to say, not knowing that Heather was going to be here, not knowing anything outside of what I had control over. So where do we go from here? Next week we begin our 6-week study entitled Be Disciples. Here it will not be about making you disciples, for you already are. You are being taught as his disciple here. The challenge is to be a disciple, to live like a disciple. The Bangles sang a song in the 80s, "Walk Like an Egyptian." I'm not going to play this song. Here you are going to walk, talk, and live like a disciple. I want to share an experience. Ron had his experience on the bus yesterday. I had my experience at the dollar store, Dollar Tree specifically. I'm getting stuff for Shabbat school for the kids, and I'm checking out, being rung up and everything, and there's a gentleman behind me. He says, "I like your hat." Everybody knows I have a Jerusalem hat. And he asked me a question. He says, "Do you know anybody in Jerusalem?" It's like, "Yeah, I have a congregant who moved to Jerusalem just recently." Well, not recently. He said, oh, that's great. Then he asked another question. He said, "Do you know anybody born in Jerusalem?" I said, "Yeah, I do." His wife was actually born in Jerusalem. It's like, no, that's not what I was getting at. And then he said, "Well, what about Jesus?" And I didn't correct him then. I said, "Well, Jesus wasn't born in Jerusalem, but he was born in Bethlehem, but close enough." And he started basically witnessing to me as a disciple. Needless to say, he did not know what was coming his way. I said, "Well, thank you." And I said, "I am a Messianic Jew." Looked a little puzzled. He said, "I'm a Jewish person who believes that Jesus is the Messiah." I said, "Oh, really?" And I told him about the congregation. I invited him. Obviously, he's not here today, but I'm not concerned about that because when I give an invitation out, I may not see people for months afterwards. So the invitation's open-ended. There's no expiration. Then as I was getting ready to leave, he said, "You taught me something." And then I turned back and I said to him, "Good, because rabbi in Hebrew means teacher, so I guess I did something. I guess I did what I was supposed to do." remembering Ron's scenario, you never know when somebody is going to be placed right in front of you. What did I call them? A divine appointment. You never know when a divine appointment, because it's not going to show up on your phone, in your calendar. You can't plan it. It happens. So the idea of being disciples is being aware. Not going out and preaching to people. But when God opens a door for you, recognizing the door is open. Remember, God opens doors that only He can open. And He closes doors that only He can close. Try opening a door that God has closed. An addendum to the definition of insanity. Keep trying because it's not going to happen. So I share these things with you today, preparing you, because this is where we're going from here. So if everybody will please rise.